The last time I looked, the list of Democratic Party presidential candidates had grown to 18, reminding us of the GOP free-for-all with 17 candidates in 2016. The multitude of candidates surely makes it difficult to receive public attention, but just as Donald Trump proved last time, someone, perhaps someone unexpected, will emerge from this scrum to become the Democratic candidate. While the name of the ultimate candidate will only become clear many months from now, what is clear is that most Democratic candidates are embracing a set of proposals which could radically transform long-established institutions of our federal government. Perhaps the most significant proposed change is the abolition of the Electoral College, the oft-maligned way through which the people of the respective states choose our chief executive. While a popular vote majority or plurality seems logical to many, ending the Electoral College would actually bring unintended political consequences, which would change the way candidates campaign for the presidency and would likely bring instability and uncertainty when the popular vote is very close. Today, some complain that presidential candidates only contest those states, think Florida and Ohio, where the popular vote is likely to be close, and ignore states such as New York, Texas, and California, where the outcome is virtually certain. While there are merits to this criticism, such concern ignores the fact that over time the political dynamic will change in individual states. For instance, Wisconsin and Michigan were thought likely to vote for the Democratic candidate until 2016. Conversely, North Carolina, Arizona, and Colorado trended Republican in recent decades, but are now up for grabs in 2020 by Democrats. Abolishing the college would also mean candidates would spend a disproportionate amount of time in highly populous states, thereby ignoring smaller states. This disadvantage to small states makes it highly unlikely the Constitution will ever be amended, as three-quarters of the states would have to agree. That will simply not happen. Moreover, abolishing the college could potentially result in electoral chaos if the national popular vote were very close, as happened in the Kennedy-Nixon election of 1960. The 2000 presidential contest in Florida is a perfect example of why abolishing the college could bring electoral instability. For weeks, the campaigns fought in court over the validity of ballots, ballot formation, hanging chads, and the eligibility of certain voters. Eventually, George W. Bush defeated Al Gore by only 537 votes out of 5.9 million cast, winning the college and the presidency. In a close national election, this spectacle would be played out in every state, in every county, in every election district. The result would be chaos. Were ballot challenges to last beyond the January 20th date for the inauguration of a new president, the outcome would be determined in the House of Representatives, with each state delegation casting a single vote. The current effort to adopt a national popular vote compact among the states, where the state electors pledge to vote for the winner of the popular vote, regardless of the outcome in each state, is certain to be successfully challenged, as such a change would require amending the Constitution. The Electoral College, on the other hand, has the advantage of confining electoral disputes to one or perhaps two states where the outcome is in doubt. The votes in states where there is a clear winner are moved off the table, allowing the focus to be on a single state or states where the vote is close. The Electoral College proves the wisdom of the Founding Fathers, who wanted to create a republic with a lasting and stable governmental system. While not perfect, the college ensures a final, definitive outcome to our presidential elections. We should keep it. And that is how I see it.